some people have argued that they're not. Students will basically have an opportunity to learn with the experts and to gain a solid foundation in the field. With an advisory board that includes Dr. Fred Rosner, Rabbi Dr. Edward Reichman, and Rabbi Kenneth Brander, we look forward to taking advantage of a very unique opportunity. We hope that you two will take advantage of our various programming throughout the year. There's no need for a long-term commitment, and each event is independent of each other. And you may pick and choose to fit your schedule and interests. But be sure to sign up. We'll be handing out shortly a list. Everyone could please just put their name and email address on it. If you don't want to send an email, just put your name. It helps us know how many people came here today. And if you do want to receive information, even if you've already put your email address on there, just put it on again. I would just like to thank our sponsors for this event, the Center for the Jewish Future of Dinner and Learn, Yeshiva College Student Association, and the Center for the Jewish Future's Special Project. I would especially like to thank CJF Special Projects Director, Josh Joseph, standing in the back. And his assistant, unfortunately, couldn't be here with us, really. They have pretty much met with us since the inception on a weekly basis, giving us a tremendous amount of guidance in what I would call headache hours, which I'm sure Josh or Joseph can confirm. And I'd also like to thank Robert Brander, who has also met with me on a monthly basis for guidance for the Society. I would also just like to take a moment to thank the board. They're very hard-working members, and they've met almost weekly also to ensure that the Society is what it is and that this event is what it is. If I could just mention them, our Vice Presidents, David Stern and Nachum Yandor, who you guys are, but our Treasurer, Michael Delahue, our Secretary, Aaron Etra, our Program Director, Josh Krupp, and our board members, Jeremy Steinberger, Michael Teicher, and of course our Stern co-directors, Zahavis Nenzi and Alisha Levy. Just as a note, you guys can clap. Just as a note, we're looking for class representatives, so if anyone is interested in joining the board as a class representative, please speak to either myself, the Vice Presidents, or the co-Stern directors. I would also like to acknowledge and welcome a lot of new faces that are joining here for this spring kickoff event, as well as the students who are here from Columbia and NYU. We look forward to coordinating more events with you in the future. And now, we are pleased to present our first lecture of the spring featuring Rabbi Kenneth Brander. Rabbi Brander, as many of you probably know, is the Dean of Yeshiva University Center for the Jewish Future. He served as a rabbi in Boca Raton for 14 years. And he is actually an alumnus, 1984, I believe, class of Yeshiva College. And he got his smicha here in 1986 at least. He also had the distinction of serving as the personal aide to the senior Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik Zatzal. In 1999, he received special ordination from Ahon Pua, which is the Institute for Fertility, Gynecology, and Halacha in Israel. He also received smicha from Chief Rabbi Mordechai Eliyahu in the field of medical ethics, fertility, and gynecology. He's currently a PhD candidate in general philosophy at Florida Atlantic University, and has lectured widely on the topic relating to fertility and PG. In fact, just this past September, he was flown into Israel to speak at an international medical ethics conference at Bar-Ilan University, where he spoke on the topic of halachic issues relating to infertility and in vitro fertilization, and was subsequently interviewed on Israeli television. It is a privilege and an honor to have him come to speak to us on this topic. Please join me in welcoming Rabbi Brander.
I want to begin by first thanking Yonah Bardos for all of the unbelievable work that he has done to put this together. He really has done a great job tracking this down. This has been his vision, and the person who really deserves all the credit in the world is really him. So I want to begin by thanking him. It is truly a pleasure to welcome all the students from the extended schools of Yeshiva University, from Columbia, from NYU. Also to follow up on the thank you that Yonah made, someone who is becoming a very good friend in a short period of time and an esteemed colleague. I want to thank Rabbi Joseph for all of the work that he's done to help orchestrate this. Tonight we're going to talk about PGD, and I'll explain exactly what that is in a few minutes. I was had the opportunity to schmooze with a few of you, and the first question that they asked me was, "What is PGD?" So we'll discuss that in a few moments. But if I may begin with actually something a little bit different, that's a little bit bittersweet for me, but quite intimidating at the same time. The last time that I heard a class in this room was classes that Rabbi Soloveitchik used to give in this room. Every once a week or so, he would give a class on Parsha. The room was full from wall to wall, and it was so hot in here because it was so full that they used to keep all those windows open, so you would hear the traffic, the honking, and everything else like that as Rabbi Soloveitchik was giving his class. For me, the most interesting piece of that was that, as Yonah mentioned, I had the opportunity to spend some time with Rabbi Soloveitchik during my smicha years, or the years that Rabbi Soloveitchik was here during my smicha years, and during some of my undergraduate years. So what I had the opportunity to do was, he would write notes of his chumash year before he would come here. The first in morgue on the first floor was his apartment. Very nice apartment, 102 I think it is, and we would write notes. I would write the notes for him, and the interesting thing is, by the time he walked from morgue to here, he had already come up with another totally different chumash class. So I actually heard two at the same time: the one we wrote in the apartment, and then the second one that he gave here. It's a little bit intimidating to speak up in a place where Rabbi Soloveitchik would give shir. And the second thing is that this is an extremely complicated topic. It is really a topic that halacha, I don't believe, has come to total closure on yet. It's really a cutting edge issue, and you'll see that there are some tshuvas here that, quite honestly, this is the first time that these tshuvas have been shared with a larger audience. They're handwritten. They're not yet published. We'll discuss them. But I'm fond of telling a very brief story when I'm about to speak about a topic that requires so much more time, and it's already 8:25, and we're not going to do a whole long thing for those who are in our regular Wednesday night dinner and learn. We're still going to try to keep that motif so people who have night seder can still go to night seder. But there is a famous story of a rabbi who's taking a plane trip, and that's something now I do on a weekly basis. And the rabbi is sitting next to somebody, and the person says to him, "You know, Rabbi, I know that you studied for many, many years, but I understand that everything that you studied, everything that you've learned, can really be summed up in one statement, and that is, love thy neighbor as you love yourself." And the rabbi, He went to Eretz Yisrael to study, went through 4 years of Yeshiva College, then he went through a smicha program, and he was in the smicha program when it grew to 4 years, so he was in the smicha program for a long period of time. He's a little troubled that this person has summarized all of his education in one statement: love thy neighbor as you love thyself. So the rabbi turns to this person and says, "And sir, what do you do?" Person responds, "You know, Rabbi, I don't think you really will understand what I do. I'm an astrophysicist, and I really think that you really won't understand what I do." So the rabbi says, "It's true. I think you have at least two PhDs. I'm really not going to understand what you do, but I understand that everything that you study for both PhDs can be summarized in one statement: twinkle, twinkle, little star." And that's exactly the way I feel here, because we're going to spend some time together, but we're going to do this in the twinkle, twinkle, little star version. We're not going to have the opportunity to do it to drill deeply, but we'll have the opportunity to get a little bit of an overview. So let's begin. Before we begin with the sources, let's discuss exactly what PGD is. a pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, PGD. What is PGD? Well, in order for us to understand what PGD is, we have to understand what IVF is. IVF is a form of medical procedure that allows couples that are having difficulties having children to be able to have children in the following fashion. There are many different types of procedures to help couples actualize their dream of having children. This is one of them. It is in many ways one of the more rigorous ones. A woman receives the transmittal hormones to stimulate many follicles, and then what happens is many eggs are harvested, and then the man, the husband, and this is a standard case, will express his sperm, and then in a laboratory, IVF, in vitro fertilization, what will happen is the sperm and the egg are in a laboratory environment, are crafted or choreographed in a way that allows the sperm to fertilize the egg. And then you create, prior to the embryo being, fertilized egg being re-implanted, you have fertilized eggs. Now what normally happens in a lab is when you have an IVF procedure, in vitro fertilization procedure, there's a lot of halakhic issues. We're not going to discuss any of them. Who's the mother? Who's the father? What are all those issues? If the sperm comes from somebody else, is that person the father? If the egg comes from somebody else and the person hosting the fertilized egg is a different woman, who's the mother, the genetic owner of the egg, or the host mother? We're not discussing any of those issues. But it is important to recognize that what really does happen is the egg is fertilized within the laboratory. And then what happens is under a microscope, perhaps in the blastocyst stage of development, maybe even a little bit earlier, they look underneath a microscope and they see which eggs have been fertilized nicely, which have appropriate shape. There's different paradigms, protocols, and then they return some of those fertilized eggs into the womb. They won't return one, they'll return several. And the reason why they'll return several is because sometimes the fertilized egg won't take in the wall of the uterus, and you want to make sure that the woman can become pregnant. If you only return one egg and it doesn't take in the wall of the uterus, obviously you're not going to have a woman who's become pregnant. So you'll return several. And there are challenges like that. But let's say you return three or four, and all of a sudden all of the eggs take, and now she is pregnant with four fetuses. And sometimes you can have a situation where it's too dangerous for her to carry four, so you'll have to reduce some of those fetuses in order to make sure that she's healthy, and also that the fetuses are not pursuing each other. And there are several other issues that go along with that. So, but basically what always used to happen was you looked underneath the microscope, you decided which fetuses were the proper ones, and then you returned them into the womb of the mother. Well, with PGD, you can do the following. 3 days into the fertilized, after the egg has been fertilized, when it's basically now eight cells, you go in, you take out one of the eight cells, and you look at that, you do a whole bunch of different tests on that cell. The first thing that happens is it doesn't affect the seven remaining cells because they'll just continue to grow. They won't even miss the eighth one that left. They'll just continue to reproduce. You take that one cell out and you can do the following. You can test that one cell for a whole bunch of genetic disorders. You can test that cell to see if the fertilized egg has cystic fibrosis, muscular dystrophy, single cell anemia issues. Even now, there was an article in the New York Times like a week ago that perhaps now that we can trace the gene of where diabetes comes from, you can even perhaps check whether the fertilized egg has the potential in the future of being a diabetic or not. You can test whether the child will be deaf or dumb, but you can also check whether the child will be a male or a female simply by the chromosomes. XX would be female, male would be XY, and you can just simply check and decide, and then what happens is you can decide which eggs you want to return and which eggs you don't want to return. You can basically do the following. You can say, hey, listen, I want to make sure that we only return fertilized eggs in which there are no health problems whatsoever. What do you do with the fertilized eggs that could potentially grow into children that do have some health risks? Not major health risks. Let's say they have, you know, let's say they have a health risk like Down's, which you can live with Down's. You can have a productive life with Down syndrome. Can you throw away that fertilized egg? Can you throw away a fertilized egg if the child to be born out of that fertilized egg will be deaf or blind? Can you throw away that fertilized egg? Or let's say the following thing happens, and this is a true story. It happened in Eretz Yisrael. Let's say the following thing happens. There's a man who does not have sperm. He wants to have a family. So what happens is he gets sperm from a non-Jew, and they fertilize, which is what Rav Moshe Feinstein says you should do, and so Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach says you should do in these cases. And they fertilize his wife's egg with a non-Jew sperm. Now this man happens to be a Kohen. Right? He happens to come from he's a Kohen. He gets the first Aliyah. The child that's going to be born is not going to be a Kohen. The child that's going to be born is going to be Yisrael. Now he lives in a community where everyone's going to think this is his child totally. And this child's going to get bar mitzvahed, get called up to the Torah, and not get called for the first Aliyah, Kohen, but he's going to get the child's going to get Shlishi. And all of a sudden everyone in the community is going to know that this was not really his child. So what he says to the doctor is, I only want my wife to have girls, because I won't have the bar mitzvah problem. Right? I won't have that problem. I want her only to have girls. Only return fertilized eggs in which the child born will be a girl. Does halacha allow you to do this process of PGD, throw out the male children, like we read in the parsha a few weeks ago, throw out the male children and keep the females? Does halacha allow you to do such a thing? Those are the discussions that we're going to have right now. This is not Star Trek science. This is standard protocols that you can do in almost any reproductive facility at this time, the process of PGD that allows you to decide based on either issues of sickness or concerns about any type of illness or male-female, color of hair, color of eyes. You can pick which type of child that you want. Can you play God and do these things or not? That's the question that we're going to discuss today. So is everyone with me so far? Okay, so let's open up our sources and discuss it. This idea of trying to choose whether one has male or female child is not something new. It's actually discussed within the Gemara in many different sources. For example, on page 1, you have, let's look at where it says number Zion. Everyone see that? Isha Kitazria Vyoda Zachar. A woman, when she has a male child, says the Gemara, you want to have male children? Do the following things. Chet, you want to have male children? Make Havdalah on Friday, on Saturday night, over wine. You make it over milk or beer or something else like that, you're going to have girls. You want to have male children? Make it over wine. Or, says number Tet, you want to have male children? Then make sure that when you have that moment of intimacy with your wife, that you treat her in a respectful fashion. Or Yud Aleph, which also discusses the idea of how one can be guaranteed to have a male child. Or the Gemara in Bava Basra that we have on the bottom of page 1. Ma yaseh adam v'yulo banim zecharim. What should a man do in order to have male children? Rabbi Elazar says, give a lot of tzedakah. Give a lot of tzedakah, then you'll have male children. So you see that there is this phenomenon in Shas and many places in which there was this interest of trying to figure out a way. Sometimes it was a form of a diet. Sometimes it was a form of doing certain mitzvot in order to be able to have a specific type of child. There's actually a gynecologist that wrote an article trying to and prove that perhaps one or two of these ideas within the Gemara have medical legitimacy to them. We don't have time to go into that today, but my point is this idea of trying to figure out a way to have a male or female child is something that's already found within the Gemara. What is the role of science in halacha? Let's turn to the next page of our handout, page 2. What's the role of science? Here, we're introduced to a Gemara in Bava Basra. The Gemara in Bava Basra tells us a very important idea. The Gemara in Bava Basra has a story between Rabbi Akiva and the Roman governor of Judea, Quirinius Lucius. The Roman governor of Judea says the following. You know why Jews are condemned to Gehenna? You know why Jews are going to go to hell? They're going to be condemned to Gehenna because they help the poor. Because suppose a king incarcerates a subject. He says, no one's to give this subject food or drink. And somebody goes and gives that subject food or drink. Would not the king be angry? And you, the Jewish people, help the poor. You're violating the will of the king, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore you are condemned to Gehenna. Says Rabbi Akiva, suppose a king incarcerated his son and said, do not give my son any food or drink. And then along comes somebody and sneaks a little food and drink to the king's son. Would not the king really be happy? And we're called not only the servants of God, but the children of God. And therefore, we're not condemned to Gehenna because we help the poor. It is the way we are empowered to play a role in Olam Haba. Rabbi Soloveitchik, and I believe actually from this room, once explained this machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Quirinius Rufus. Rabbi Soloveitchik said, Quirinius Rufus says that in life we are to look at the world through the glasses of God. God willed that this person should be poor. God willed that this couple should not have children. Who are we to interfere with the way God wills something? Rabbi Akiva said, we do not wear the glasses of God. We have no right to take a providential view on life. Our job is to be God's partners. God did not create a perfect world. God created a world that was imperfect. And it's our job to be the shutaf, the partner of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and change the world around us. Therefore, says Rabbi Akiva, we deserve a place in Olam Haba when we are involved with saving society. Science is the gift. We're going to have to stop this, okay? I just want to teach. Science is the mechanism through which HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows us, as Rav Kook says, allows us to play a role in society. It's a gift that God has given us. In fact, look at the Me'iri, the next source on page 2. In the 1200s, the Me'iri writes the following. The Me'iri lived from 1249 to 1360. This is an unbelievable Me'iri. He was discussing the notion of what is considered magic that's forbidden. So the Me'iri writes, anything that is done in a natural way is not considered magic. Afilu, this is unbelievable. Afilu, even Yedru Livroa Riot Yafot Shelo Mizvu Hamin. Even when we will be able to create human beings, not through the natural act in which we normally create human beings from. Commotion, no doubt, is Sifri Hateva She'ina Hadavar Mina. As we know from the Svarim Sifri Hateva. That we know from Svarim Kabbalah and other things, that that's not impossible to create human beings in ways not through the natural act. Rasha'im lasot, it is permitted to do that because that's science, not magic. Shekoshavu tivi, anything that comes through science, ain't ever called kishur. It's not considered magic, and therefore it's permitted to be done. So the first thing that we need to see here is that there is a gift given to us known as science. And that we have to recognize the fact that this gift that has been given to us, known as science, is a means through which we play a role with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We imitate God, Mitatio Dei. So, with that recognition, let's ask ourselves the questions.
I take 20 eggs from a woman, and I fertilize all 20 eggs with that, with the woman's husband, and now they decide to return 3 or 4 of those eggs because they only want male children, or only want female children, like the example I gave you, and they want to throw out the other 16 fertilized eggs. All 16 of those eggs can become children. Are they permitted to throw out fertilized eggs? That's the question number one. Are you permitted to throw out fertilized eggs? So in order for us to understand that, we need to look at the Gemara. So let's look at the bottom of page 2 of the Gemara Yavamos. Is everyone with me so far? Everyone with me? Okay. So the Gemara Yavamos says the following. The Gemara says that there is a halakha that until 40 days, the fetus, even in utero, is not considered, does not have the status at all of a human being. It's considered maya ba'alma, like a sack of water. That's all it is. In fact, that has halakhic ramifications. Because if a woman gives birth, and if a woman miscarries, and the fetus is later than 40 days, let's say the fetus is 2 months, and then the woman gives birth to a male child, there's no pidyon haben, because the pidyon haben, you only have a pidyon haben when it's the first child and there's been no miscarriage beforehand. So if a woman had a fetus that miscarried after 3 months or so and then had a male child, no pidyon haben. If a woman had a miscarriage less than 40 days and then had a male child, is there a pidyon haben? I don't hear you. Yes, why? Because it's not yet considered in those 40 days. It's not yet considered a fetus. So she didn't miscarry a fetus, and therefore the first child is a healthy born boy, and therefore there is a pidyon haben. What does this teach us? That a fertilized egg, even in utero, does not have the halakhic status of a human being in any way for the first 40 days. That would be, one second, that would be one proof that you could throw out the fertilized egg. Especially because the fertilized egg, in this case, is not only not 40 days old, it's only a few days old, but it's not in a location that it has potential to ever become a human being. You can keep a fertilized egg in a laboratory for 18 months, let alone 9 months, and all it will be is just a mushy nothing. It will never become a human being. The only way you can grow a human being is in the womb of a woman. So therefore, there is no iser, it's not considered any form of abortion because it's less than 40 days old, and more than that, it is not found within the womb of the woman. This idea is highlighted, then I'll take a question, in a few different places. Turn to the next place. Asya, a very important journal to those that are going into medicine, or for that matter, those who are becoming rabbanim, or for that matter, anyone who wants to be serious about Indian Jewish medical ethics. So Rav Chaim David Halevi, one of the major poskim, writes the following. I have a little bracket there. He speaks here about ilu upari. We're not talking about that. That's talking about when a woman has an IVF procedure and it fails. How does it fail? They returned too many fetuses and now she's carrying 5 or 6. And what happens is she can't carry 5 or 6. So what's going to happen is those 5 or 6 are fighting with each other for life. They're considered pursuers of each other. They're considered a rodent of each other and they're pursuing the mother. How do you do fetal reduction? What are the protocols, the halakhic protocols? There's a place, so what they do is they stick a needle basically in the sac of each fetus that they want to reduce, and they kill, they call it fetal reduction, it's a nice way of saying what they really do. They kill those fetuses so that there are less within the womb, so those that are remaining can live. Well, are there any protocols? If let's say I have 5 boys at home, and I really want to have some girls, I want it to be quiet and nice in the house. I both have boys and girls, thank God. And it's much easier, at least at this stage in my children's development, to raise the female children than the male. And that might change, you tell me later on, but right now, that's what it is. Anyway, so what happens is, let's say let's say they say, listen, I only have boys at home, I really want girls, just reduce the male children, the male fetuses, don't reduce the female fetuses, are you permitted to do that? So kind of a lady deals with those issues, we're not dealing with those. But what he does say to us is that you should just know the following. You see where I have that bracket on that page? It's page 3 of our handout. See where I have the bracket? And then I have a line here. He said, I have a line. Shekol ha-beitziyot shekukru b'zman shehem b'mukhana ein alehem kal b'yikar b'yubar. Any fertilized eggs, or any eggs, do not have the status of a fetus. You don't desecrate the Shabbos for them. And you could throw them out if they haven't been chosen to be put back into the womb. There's only a prohibition of abortion if once the egg is in the womb of the mother, because of the fact that there is the location. It's there in which it has the potential to grow into a child. That idea is highlighted, if you turn to the next page, page 4 of our handout, you'll see on the right-hand side, there's a letter from Rabbi Zilberstein, one of the major poskim in Eretz Yisrael. Right? Right? You hear him? A major poskim. So he says the same thing. Otam peitziyot ha-pigiyot ha-machla. He's talking about fertilized eggs that have some type of machala, have some type of disease. You don't have to return them and you can destroy them. But there's no isur because they don't have a din, they don't have a law of a nefesh. Because the prohibition is to the prohibition of abortion, whatever that prohibition is, and Yona said there's going to be a whole class on it, there's three different approaches to what abortion could be. And based on those differences, you have different approaches of when abortion can be done. It's not a black and white issue. There are times when halakha does permit abortion, and very rare cases when it does permit it. So therefore, he says, since in the location it's now, in the lab, it can never become a fertilized egg, it can never become a child, you can destroy it, it's not a problem. Also, in reshut v'chalav Shabbat, you cannot desecrate the Shabbat for it, because it can't grow into a child. A woman who's pregnant, even if she's pregnant for only 20 days, you can call Hatzalah, drive her to the hospital, no problem whatsoever. The Shaila is, why is that permitted? The fetus is only 20 days old, it's only considered a sack of water, and there's like 20 different tshuvas on that, the Bahad, the Ramban, and others. We're not going to get into that now. But the point here is that throwing out a fertilized egg does not seem to be problematic. So let's review what we've done today. We've mentioned that this whole idea of trying to select a child is something that's already found in the Gemara. We've discussed that science allows us to be partners with the Kaddish Baruch Hu. We have an unbelievable Me'iri that actually focuses on our dilemma about the issue of being able to create a child not through the normal way, and that is considered something that one is permitted to do, not mandated to do, but permitted to do. And then we brought up what the halakhic issues are. And the first of those halakhic issues are, a fertilized egg, can that be destroyed? And since it is not in the location where it has the potential to grow into a human being, any concern about abortion is obviated. So that's the main that's one issue. But that's not the main issue. The main issue is the following. The main issue is, can we play God? Okay, we're God's partners, but we're not a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Can I decide, you know what, I can afford, and by the way, in Eretz Yisrael, PGD is at times covered by insurance. Here, you have to go through IVF procedures, like $15,000, then you have to go through PGD, it's a few more dollars, so it's a little bit of a financial challenge. In Eretz Yisrael, IVFs are within the parameters of your insurance. And also PGD, if the board of the hospital approves it for you, and by the way, in the case that I told you, the board of that hospital did approve it, the case I told you about the man who did not want to have male children for the reasons I just articulated, can you go through a process of PGD and decide, hey, I just want to have female children, I just want to have male children, I just want to have children with blonde hair, children with blue eyes. Can I do that? Okay, science allows me to do that. I take the cell, I take the fertilized egg when it's the size of a grain of sugar, and I take out one of the cells and I can test that cell without compromising the fertilized egg. I just pull one cell out and it grows back in here, and I just do all types of genetics screening and training and all different types of work with that cell. Am I permitted to do that? And what happens if the couple can have children, but they know that every time that they've had a child together, that child has had certain illnesses, and they want to make sure that they have a child that doesn't have certain challenges. So they're going to go through an IVF process, not because they can't have children, but they want to do this in vitro fertilization for the following reason. We'll take the sperm and the egg, fertilize it in the lab, check the fertilized egg before we return it to the womb of the mother, because we don't want to do an amniocentesis. An amniocentesis being that when the woman is pregnant, they draw from the amniotic fluid and they can tell many different things about the baby. The only problem is, at that time, let's say you find out that there's a challenge that this baby has, then you have a real halakhic issue. Can you do an abortion? And at the time in which you can check when the egg only has 8 cells, you check if there's a certain illness, there's no halakhic question that can just destroy the eggs. There's no abortion issues at that point in time. So PGD is maybe even halakhically better than a couple who's had challenged children in the past, using PGD as a way of trying to obviate ever having those challenges again. Does everyone understand the question that I just raised? Does everyone understand that question? Yes, in the back. By giving staka, or by using wine for Havdalah,
right,
had an extra fit. But it doesn't mean that you can use PGD. We admonish our checking the eggs and then deciding which ones to throw out and which ones not to throw out. There's a fine line between having a diet of some type which might change the pH base during acts of intercourse that can create a way in which the X or the Y sperm could travel faster, that to admonish, look at the things and just throw out the ones you want and keep the ones you want.
Isn't it possible that they thought what they were doing was actual science? It wasn't just like a fair.
Okay, good point. Yeah, I think that there's a point there. But what we're going to do is, I want to bring these questions, then I want to share with you some of the tshuvas from Shlomo Zalman, Shlomo Zalman Orbach, one of the greatest post-skim, greatest halakhic disciples of this generation, Rav Norbert, who wrote the Shmir HaShabbos Tuchasa, those of you who went to Yeshiva Koltel, Rav Neventhal has a little piece on this, and we'll see what they say on this issue. Yes?
I'm not sure how comparable this is, but with Yaakov and the sheep, didn't he kind of do that also?
It's playing. That's an echo. He didn't destroy. He didn't destroy one. Keep one.
But he put them. He put the certain ones aside and only used these, and then he used certain.
So the easiest answer is that Yaakov lived before Matan Torah. There's a whole new set of laws that we have now, and therefore it's not a good guess.
Isn't there a way to choose male and female before PGD?
Right, but that's not going to. There is actually something called a sperm wash. It's not 100% accurate. PGD is 100%, and the sperm wash can then people use that, and then they put the. What you do basically is that the sperm is separated in some way, and then what happens is you throw out one type. There's actually bigger problems there called, which is something that we're not going to get into. But yes, there is that issue. Yes. In the back,
where does that PGD stand for again?
Pre, I always forget this. Pre-implementation, just joking. Pre-implementation genetic diagnosis. Pre-implementation genetic diagnosis. Why they didn't put an I in there, I don't know. Yes. To the major issue here, and we'll be done in a few minutes. So, in the Nishmat Avraham, Avraham Steinberg, he asked the following question. The question is about what we said before, about the ability to be able to check. He says he asked for Shlomo Zalman Orbach regarding the idea of being able to have one type of to have one type of child over another child. So he asked the following. The question is, let's look at line 17. Page 4, line 17. I urge people to head there. After they start doing in vitro fertilization, things of that nature, they can check whether they want to have a male or a female child. Is it permitted to, here it's talking about a sperm watch, is it permitted to do that? And Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach wrote that he was not in favor of that. He explains why, because of Ashkasas Shifazera destroying the sperm, that's not our concern in PGD. But he says further, that there's another issue here. And that is trying to decide whether you have a male or female child through any type of scientific venue, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, goes over the point of being a partner with God. And instead you're starting to act like God. You don't have a right, says Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, to be able to decide whether you have a male or female child. As he says in Surah 27, quoting Gemara and Brachas, Bahadi Kafti Dirachmana Lavala. In this area of God, why are you interfering? Why are you interfering? But, he says, if the purpose of doing these tests is to make sure that you have children that are healthy, that's not overstepping your bounds. So what Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach is saying in a modern context is the following. To do PGD, in order to make sure you have healthy children, that's 100% okay. To do PGD so that when the child gets an aliyah, people won't worry about the fact that he was supposed to get Cohen and gets
lychee, or to make sure you have a male or female, which Shlomo Zalman says you can't do that. That's over the top. That's not being God's partner, that's being God. And he draws the line in the sand between doing a pre-implementation genetic diagnosis for health reasons versus doing it for reasons of just simply for convenience that he does not permit. This idea is highlighted in a few other places. Let's look at it for a second. Don't have that much left. And here is new material that is not in everything that I showed you till now. You could find on your own. You can do whatever. What I'm about to show you now is new material. On page 5, you have letters. This is the way Mahon Pua is a very important organization. And they, what they do is when they have questions, they send out questions to different postings. So the question they say like this is, listen, if a couple wants to choose whether to have a male or a female, there's three different things they can do. There's certain forms of a diet they can have, which maybe works 60% of the time. Then there is D, and that is do a sperm wash, that maybe works 85% of the time. Or there is PGD, which is number 3, which works 100% of the time. Are you allowed to be able to check to have male or female through any one of these protocols? That's the letter that was sent out to post from around Eretz Yisrael. Let's turn to the next page. Top of page 6. A handwritten letter from Rav Nevinson. Right? First 4 lines are just introduction. My niyasaiti is the 5th line. The first approach is okay because there's no problems of hashkasa zera. The second one approach of sperm wash is better than the 3rd approach. But he does not forbid the 3rd approach. You have the chief rabbi, the Sephardic chief rabbi, from Amar, who says a diet way, that's definitely okay, but the other ways he's not happy with, because the same, he says, what's the prohibition of colliding, of growing certain species together, or certain foods together? It's not because it's forbidden. It's not because there's something wrong with it. It's because we shouldn't be involved in manipulating creation that God did. Therefore, he says, to make a decision when there's no medical need to decide whether you want to have a male or female, he says he doesn't permit that. He does not weigh in. He said it could be, there might be permission to do it when you want to do it for medical reasons, or you want to do it in order to be able to have both a male and female child, which is more lenient than Rav Shlomo Zalman. But to organize your family to make white boys better than girls better than boys, that he does not permit. The next page, you have a letter from Rav Nordberg, who wrote the Shmira Shabbos Pilchasa. And Rav Nordberg writes the following. It bothers me that you worry about these things. I thought your job is to help people to have children and not to basically leave the rest in God's hands. And by the way, look at Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, what he says, and that's what we read. And that is that Rav Shlomo Zalman did not permit it for any other reason than for medical reasons. You turn to the next page, you have the chief rabbi of Ramat Gan, who says, it takes like an hour to read his writing here, but basically what he says is, if it's to stop, the PGD will stop a person from having a child that has certain challenges, then that's mutter l'chatchila. But for other reasons, he would not permit it. And then you have the tshuva from one of the major Sephardic poskim, who actually first had a little gematria. That's how you know he's Sephardic. No, his name is right there. And that is that Mahon Pua, the gematria is Azer gematria Zera, Zera gematria is Sparim, Ana Hashem, not Stefano, whatever. Then he says, on the bottom, Ailey Panay is flying, and goes, I don't have time to deal with this because he's doing this gematria. But it goes, obviously the first approach is not a problem, it's no different. than the Gemara's examples of trying to have male children. However, the second and third approach, sperm wash and PGD, that seems like you're involved with acting like God. However, when it comes to stopping the birth of a child that will have certain types of challenges, it's permitted to do that. And then he adds, well, maybe you should ask a couple, not me. And maybe that's really the way we should end this. That is, I'm not here to hospice Shiloh, I'm not a gadol with Torah. I'm just here to introduce to you important ideas. And what is clear here is the following. Science is a gift that God gave us, and we should recognize that. There are certain halakhic issues here. The idea of destroying eggs. We discussed that's not really the issue. The real issue is a more philosophical halakhic issue, and that is, when does our role of being God's partner end and playing God begin? And maybe you have Rachel Zalman and others that say, the minute you're trying to do this in order to choreograph your family in a way that you consider to be the correct way, that's when you start playing God. That's not committed. The minute you start doing this in order to make sure that you spare children from having certain challenges, that is permitted, and one can do that. Thank you very much.
If everyone could just wait 1 second. I just wanted to make sure that everyone put their name down on the sheets that we sent around. It's very important for us for future events and also to make sure that you guys benefit in the future. I wanted to thank our everybody for coming, and I would like to really thank all of you for coming. This was an excellent turnout, far better than we had ever imagined. I apologize in the source sheets. Next time there will be more. And our everybody will now entertain questions, whoever wishes to ask them.
Sure. What?
Who are they?
Dr. Burns, please.
I'd just like to make a comment. You stressed this 3 times very appropriately, but it might not be appreciated. And that is that the use of PGD is halakhically mutter for couples. These are for married couples. It really should not be considered as a substitution for genetic screening. For example, if you're trying to avert a healthcare crisis, let's say a case accident, it's perfectly appropriate for a married couple who are both carriers to undergo PGD. But for a couple who is not married to say, well, if both of us are carriers, no sweat, we'll get married and employ PGD, that's an entirely different halakhic child. The reason is that although PGD has been very successful, over 2,000 PGD births already reported. The fact is, if one has to practice PGD for health reasons, like for a case accident, then a couple cannot have normal conjugal relations. Otherwise, if they have normal conjugal relations, then they're just as likely to have a case act baby, and PGD is not an option. So to Lachatila, to say to an unmarried couple, you can go ahead and
I would even go, I thank you very much for pointing that out, even go one step further. Actually, one of the things that we're working with Dr. Gross is, and Yona mentioned it, is we're working on trying to figure, to have days at Stern at Yeshiva College, in which we do genetic screening as part of the center and stuff like that. I know there are other very important organizations that do it, because I think it is a very important thing that's done. Genetic screening, so that we can make sure that when, at a time in which there are limited challenges, when people are single and they can do genetic screening, they can really try to obviate some of the challenges that can happen if genetic screening is not done. Yes, please.
Even if you mentioned that it's not really an issue in starting embryos, why do you think there's a fuss that there are not?
It is. That's a very good question, and the answer to that question is because the zera was used was not for levatala, because there were several embryos, there were several fertilized eggs from that zera that were returned to the womb. So it's not considered hashchasa shifra zera levatala, because what you did was you took a whole bunch of zera, you fertilized eggs, you took some of those eggs, you returned them to the womb. So at the point in which that sperm was expressed, it was not for any other reason than for pururavu. Right.
You mentioned that if you're doing
the
anagrami, you
think
that
you
said there are conditions. You said it is permitted, but
unnecessary. Right, because that 100%. And actually, we actually just started a program for 20 rabbanim. Most of them are graduates of the Kol Elyon. Some of them are part of the Kol Elyon, to teach them these halakhas in great depth. Every day, every week, for 2.5 hours, they come together, and either Rabbi Burstein through video conferencing, Rabbi Dr. Eddie Reichman, on occasion myself, and other scholars in residence. And the topic we did today was this issue. It's a very important topic, but there are times in which it's important that one limit any need to do hashchasa shifra zera of any type, and that's what is being discussed in that tshuva that you mentioned. And he's therefore concerned about the sperm wash for that reason. Yes. Except, first of all, that's why the normative approach is that it's not so clear, as questions of whatever. There, you took all the sperm, unless you did ICSI IVF, which we also wouldn't consider Hashashah Sipazera. You took all the sperm, you took a whole bunch of them, you cleaned them, you washed them, you took the ones that looked the best, you put them in a petri dish, or in an appropriate medium that allowed them to fertilize eggs, and then basically once they developed, you chose the ones that you thought were the best. So that whole procedure bared fruit, and that is to have children. So therefore, even though some might be discarded, the same way when one has relations, there are millions of sperm that are ejaculated. It only takes one to fertilize an egg. It's not considered. There's no issues of any sort here. The idea is that because the group of sperm that was used to create fertilized eggs, the ones that you don't use, one can discard without worrying about how choices are there. It's not that everybody would say run and go do that. Most people would suggest, and I would suggest to people, why don't you freeze those eggs you're not using? Don't throw them out. I'm just saying. That's not for the reasons you just articulated. I'm saying that's not the critical concern with PGD. The critical concern with PGD is the issue of not playing the role of God when it's not for issues of disease, but issues of just, you know, you want male or female children for whatever your disposition is. Everyone will put it together with Hashkosa Zera. Where does Rav Amar say that? And Rav Amar is on page 6. He doesn't say anything about Hashkosa Zera. You have to remember that. Well, because they project to stage B because of Hashkasa Zera there, and that's sperm wash.
Right.
But the PGD issue, I gave you the tubers yourself. You'll look at them yourself. I didn't cut them, paste them. I just gave them to you as I got them. So you'll look at them yourself. You'll see that it's pretty concerned. Their major concern is being fooling around with nature. That's their major issue. That's why we have postmen of this generation. The postmen of this generation helped define what exactly the Meiri meant.
Okay.
Yes, you have a question? Anyone else? Okay. Yes, please. One, two. Why don't we? We'll take all three questions. Then I'll answer them, and we'll take a few here. Yes.
So in terms of Rosh Hashanah and Aurora, when he says that you can do it, you'll be able to screen it for the health of the child. So are we to assume like a child who had trisomy 21 who could lead a normal life that wouldn't be considered for the health of the child, as opposed to someone with a sickle cell who would definitely be?
I would be of the opinion that reading Rav Shlomo Zalman, he didn't say a machla that is life threatening. He said any machla. I would say that he's permitted to do it in both of those cases. Yes, I'm sorry. Okay, so that. Why are you taking it? I'll answer that. Yes. Anyone else that you please?
I just
someone else had a question. I'm going to take that question because of the bus is leaving in like 5 minutes, and I'll try to answer it in two. Yes. The sperm wash is not for healthy sperm. The sperm wash is to be able to separate the X and Y's so that you can what? Yeah. Now let me just mention the other things that we just said before. On the tshuvas here, I was a little concerned whether I should hand these out or not, because I'm not real in-depth tshuvas. But you should just realize, and that's the way I began, and that's the way I'll end. The PGD issue is really cutting edge. There isn't formal tshuvas yet on it. These are just letters of discussions between Gedolim. No one's publishing these. They're not meant to be published. They're meant to be a masav umatan, a dialogue between people in the field. There's no real tshuvas on this. The thing that I quoted from Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is not based on PGD. It was on sperm wash, where he makes rules about those issues. It wasn't on PGD. It's important to realize that we're not at the point yet within the halachic system that you have 20-page tshuvas on these issues. In 5 years from now or 2 years from now, you'll be at that stage. But this is too new to have this stuff out yet. We're just analyzing and discussing it in the depth that we're having now. And then I think you'll find more serious tshuvas about it, not as arbitrary as they're mentioned here. Okay, why don't we stop here? I'll stay for any other questions. And thank you very much. Have a good night.
Rav Nevinsov says that he says Jerach Hasheni Atifa LaShlishi. Said that even the sperm wash is even better than the
right. I don't know why. I would assume because the PGD is Mamish playing God.
And he doesn't make a difference between health reasons and
you have what I have.
Right.
You have what I have.
And you think the reason is because it's playing God and not because he thinks that the right way embryos are not
Shiva Zara Batala? You have what I have.
Okay.
I don't have any more information or any lessons.
Okay.
Just overhearing the conversation, perhaps the reason is the sperm wash, perhaps the embryo doesn't exist yet. They're just saying you're the wrong gender and I don't want it.
Very well.
All the rabbis are saying it's about. We're getting involved in Masad Rashid,
right?
But, like for example, Rabbi Amar said about Kil'ayim.
Right.
But with a kid that the parents are giving, we say only Gemara saying that we should be Mechabed Abba'em because they are Shutafav Shakalash Baruch Hu
right.
On the kid.
Right.
So on that aspect, they have the ability and the right.
Right,
to
but the poskim are drawing the poskim are drawing a line in the sand. That's the line in the sand. I understand what you're saying.
That's a big issue. We have all the right of deciding about our
up to a point.
We are standing for God's rule.
Up to a point. You're a junior partner, not a senior partner. That's what they're saying.
And another thing, we ran this 40 days, as you said.
Yeah.
On that time, the reason was that more probably that egg wouldn't leave. Right?
No,
was the reason we had this 40 days.
No, I don't think so. We actually know now the same idea. But if you look at the fetal development of a child, you'll see that it only begins to develop certain qualities after the 40 days.
Which qualities are those?
I don't remember, but there's a book by Netter, N-E-T-T-E-R, with pictures of genetic development, of fetal development. Look at the pre and post 40 days. You'll mom will see what Omar says.
It wasn't because of probability of life.
No, I don't think so.
Right, thank you. I remember mentioning in terms of throwing out eggs that are fertilized, that's outside of the body as well as for the
massive issue. Yeah.
I remember hearing someone pointing where a rat that was reported by Blythe.
Yeah.
Right, Blythe is of the opinion that there are serious issues with that.
Of course, I mean, first of all, right, Blythe is...
Maybe he's very muffled, I don't know, I'm just saying I heard that there was serious issues, it seemed like it was never pushed.
It was Nasser?
No, I'm saying it seemed like you was definitely Mutar.
No, I was saying definitely Mutar Guyama.
I remember hearing Blythe was very much...
Ashkasa Sifazera issues.
Oh, that's why?
Yeah.
So I thought even after there's that issue that...
Ashkasa Sifazera.
That's why he's opposed to
it. Yeah.
But he is muffled against it, right?
I'm sure. He's in his life. He's machmir against all of this stuff.
Do you know
everything else as well?
He's against Rav Moshe Feinstein on the ability for there to be a sperm donor. And against Rav Shlomo Zalman
also. And also in vitro as well?
I never heard him speak about it, so I can't say. But I know he speaks out against... There was an article in the Jerusalem Report in which he was very much against the use of a non-Jewish sperm donor.
So what does he say on problems with being bothered to do?
I don't know Rabbi Black's approach well enough to answer that question.
And you know what?
You can always ask him.
You know, I reached the Mayim Alma, it was the first 20 days, and it's outside the body. It's a set issue, so it's away from the city.
No, because in that
boy, I'm the MP3 player. You got to call Katana tomorrow and let them know, okay?
Oh, you can't give it to me?
No, I'll give it to him, and then we'll show it to you, okay?
Okay.
Last time I did that, I kind of shut down my...